on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you in Madison on Devil Radio, 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM. In Waukesha on the Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. We're going right to the front lines of history in the making. And history is being made right now as we speak in Ukraine. You know, President Zelensky of Ukraine is one of the most magnificent national leaders that I've seen in my lifetime. He's been compared to Churchill. He's been compared to Roosevelt. But really, Churchill and Roosevelt and the rest of them didn't risk the personal violence that Zelensky's risking for himself, his family, his wife, and his kids from the savage, sadistic, genocidal Russians and Chechens and Syrians who poured into Ukraine. And he announced yesterday, or over the weekend, that Ukraine won't give up any territory in the east to end the war. Now, what about that? What does he mean by that? He's absolutely right. Ukraine, if you take a look at a map of Ukraine, it borders on the Black Sea and the Sea of Azov. Crimea was part of Ukraine. Odessa is part of Ukraine. Crimea is still part of Ukraine, according to international law. The Donbass region, which would be the equivalent of saying, say, northern Wisconsin, even though it's eastern Ukraine, just a section of the company, is Ukraine. And some people are saying to Zelensky, well, why don't you just give up Crimea? Why don't you give up the Donbass region? Maybe even give up Odessa for peace. Well, you can't have peace with genocidal sadists. You can't have peace with Hitler. They'll take what they can get, smile, and next week they'll be back in, replenished and with more land. And one of the things to keep in mind about what's going on here, and ultimately the stakes, what the Russians are trying to do is cut off Ukraine's access to the Black Sea and the Sea of Azov. In other words, make them landlocked, say like Bolivia. Make them landlocked. Then they'd be a vassal state. They could not export their products except through Russia with Russian permission, and Russia is stealing the money. When I say stealing the money, I don't mean tariffs. I mean quite literally. Putin and his oligarchs and a handful of generals and admirals are estimated by the United States and the EU to have stolen more than $1 trillion since Putin was president. Effectively, what they do is they take something like 80% of the profit from Russia's oil and gas exports, and they steal it. And they put it in accounts around the world. And that's one reason why the Russian military is so poorly supplied, taking such heavy casualties, because the money they thought was going to their defense budget was stolen by Putin. And fake invoices were set up, and they were told they were being delivered 100 tanks, and they were delivered 10 tanks. And they go, where are the other 90? Don't question it, Tavadish. Do not question Comrade Putin's decision. This has been going on for a long time, and if Ukraine has no ports and no access to the Black Sea and the Sea of Azov, and is landlocked, it'll disappear as a country. There's a great wheat producer. It's actually a great technology producer. In a perfect world, an independent Ukraine, you'd have technology companies around the world setting up headquarters in Kyiv. The population is well-educated, reliable, very fine people. So when Zelensky says he won't give up territory in the east to end the war, what he's really saying is that will not end the war. Russia will sit there, simulate what they're given, and then attack again. And if the West responds the same way it did now, Russia will sweep over Ukraine. I've said this many times on this show. Joe Biden sends Zelensky the planes. I want to go beyond that. There was a very, very effective presentation on CNN over the weekend about what's needed now. And this has the consensus agreement of a lot of generals and admirals, retired and present, in the American military. A mistake was made early on, not giving Ukraine more weapons right from the start, right even before the invasion. And I understand the reason. What Biden was trying to do was put together economic sanctions and get NATO and the EU on board. And that was not easy. Germany is wobbly. Germany has a soft spot for Russia. Not because they like Russia. They invaded Russia, the Nazis did, to kill them. But when it comes to Russia against other Slavs, S-L-A-V, Germany's indifferent, and it likes authoritarianism. It always has. It always has. I mean, when you think about it, it goes from the Kaiser to Hitler to the Stasi in East Berlin and East Germany. I'm talking about Prussia now, part of Prussia. There are people roaming around with Russian flags in Berlin. There are demonstrations with Russian flags. They don't care about the killing of Slavs in Ukraine. They should. I'm not saying all Germans, but a surprising number of them. So Biden had to wheel them in. He had to wheel the French in. He had to wheel the Italians in. Scandinavians, I mean, Sweden and Finland say they're neutral. Are you kidding? Austria says it's neutral. So that was part of the motivation of Biden. The other motivation is he has Donald Trump, who's pro-Putin, hitting him from the back, stabbing him in the back, going, Putin's a genius. He got all that land for $2 in sanctions. Tucker Carlson saying we should side with Putin over Ukraine. Josh Hawley siding with Putin. The Republican Party attacking him from the rear. There were a handful of exceptions, Mitt Romney and Liz Cheney. But by and large, the Republican Party has been authoritarian. It is on the road to being a fascist party. Don't say that lightly. I'm not throwing that word around lightly. They want to get rid of the right to vote. Why do I say that? Because a number of states have in these gerrymandered Republican legislatures have bills in now to have the gerrymandered, illegitimate Republican legislature pick the presidential electors, and the, quote, election would be a, quote, beauty contest. Rebecca Clayfish, the Duchess of Foxconn, so far the front runner for governor in this state until either Tommy Thompson or Tim Michaels get in, and we're going to talk about that later in the show. Duchess of Foxconn supports that. Ron Johnson supports it. So if that went through with a Republican governor, the next time what would happen would be you go and you vote for president in April of 2024, and somebody gets elected, and then Voss and all of his people just pick electors for Trump. And Trump doesn't even have to run. You know, you don't have to run to get electors. They could just say these 10 electors want Trump. He doesn't even have to run. So they also want, they're going to put in a referendum. Why a referendum? Because a referendum can't be vetoed by the governor, whereas a bill can. The referendum is this: resolved that the offices of Treasurer of Wisconsin, Lieutenant Governor, Secretary of State, Superintendent of Public Instruction, those four are no longer elected offices. They're appointed by the governor. So all you're going to get to vote for then is the governor, and he will pick them. Well, who do you think he's going to pick? As a Republican governor, they'll pick Gableman as Secretary of State. They'll pick Voss as Lieutenant Governor or Superintendent of Public Instruction. They'll pick a fraud artist designated by their donors to be treasurer, and you will have given up your right to vote. And you'll say, well, maybe the guy will do the right thing. Well, no, they never do the right thing. So here's what you have. You have that tendency in the Republican Party, and they spend all their time attacking Biden. They don't attack Putin. They attack Biden. Putin is committing genocide in Ukraine, war crimes, torturing people, and they attack Biden. They attack Biden. Biden's doing the right thing. He's sending arms now, but you know something? Not enough. He's not sending enough arms. He's not sending the right arms. I think that the U.S. Navy, and I'm biased because I was in the U.S. Navy and I was in the Mediterranean, should send a carrier group through the Dardanelles into the Black Sea. Go in international waters, go into the Black Sea between the Russian ships and the shore. Say there's going to be no more shelling of Ukraine. There's going to be no amphibious assaults on Odessa. And they would turn tail. We need planes, multi-missile launchers going to Zelensky, and we need them today. Today, Joe, send him the planes and the multi-missile launchers and everything he needs. You can stop the Nazi Ruskies. Going to a break. The lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. So the question is, why now are we not sending heavy weapons to Ukraine? The line that was drawn before was we would only send them defensive weapons. That's ridiculous. You can't be on defense all your life. The best defense is a good offense. Newt Rockne said that. Great Notre Dame coach. Best defense is a good offense. Now we're sending them some offensive weapons, the idea being to drive Russians out of territory they've already taken, which is, in effect, defensive. They shouldn't have been allowed to do it in the first place. Yes, we have a treasonous Republican Party that is stabbing Joe Biden in the back. I get it. Yes, they attack Joe Biden and not Putin. I get it. Yes, they are a party drifting towards fascism. I get it. Deal with it. Abraham Lincoln dealt with a lot worse. So did George Washington, and so did FDR. One of the things that people say, well, we're afraid that Putin will use nuclear weapons. That's baloney. He's not going to use them. And I'll tell you what, by caving in, letting him take Ukraine, and he gets emboldened, he'll be more likely to use them in the future. Unless you stop him now, the only way to get rid of Putin is military defeat. And the beauty of what's going on is, from a tactical point of view, is that the Ukrainians are more than able to defeat him. And it's not on Russian soil. Nobody can say that this is an existential threat to Russia. He has got to be assassinated by his own people. And when they continue to be strangled economically, their 600-foot flagship, the Moscow, sunk in the Black Sea by a bunch of guys on the beach with a flatbed truck and a homemade missile. We're not talking U.S. Navy here. We're not talking Battle of Midway. We're not talking Battle of Leyte Gulf. No, we're not. We're talking about the gang that couldn't shoot straight. That's what we're talking about. Now, Russia put out a threat. They put out all these threats. North Korea puts them out, too. Russia's threat a couple of days ago was the U.S. has to stop arming Ukraine or there will be, quote, unpredictable consequences, end quote. Oh, really? Oh, really? Good luck. We've been arming Ukraine now for almost 2 months. We should have been arming them for 3 months. And we've been giving them arms that have killed tens of thousands of Russian soldiers, helped them sink it's a guided missile cruiser, the Moscow. So good luck. This is an impotent threat. by a scared, impotent individual named Putin. Then they turn and they realize they miscalculated, that they have put spine in NATO, and now Finland and Sweden are considering applying. It looks as if Finland may be doing it in the next several weeks. Finland has an 840-mile border with Russia. Russia invaded them during the Second World War. Why did they invade them during the Second World War? Because Russia, under Stalin, allied with Hitler. They allied with Hitler. And the idea was that Hitler and Russia together would decimate Eastern Europe, and Russia would get a slice and restore the boundaries that they had in 1795 when Prussia, Russia, and Austria divided up Poland. And remember, Lithuania and Ukraine were part of Poland back then. The Ruskies want all that. Finland stood up to them. They have these skinny guys who know how to ski, and they wear white uniforms. Come down the mountain, you've seen them in ski jumping in the Olympics. They go seemingly forever. They're like birds up there in the air, and they can shoot a machine gun while they're doing it. Killed a lot of Ruskies. Then Hitler stabbed Stalin, broke their treaty, their contract, their mutual defense agreement, their trade agreement, invaded Russia. Stalin couldn't believe he did it. Stalin then came sniveling to the West going, we're victims too, support us. And of course, we did support him to an extent so they could fight the Nazi army from the East. As a result of all this, Finland lost some land, but at least they kept their independence, and they're not likely to give it up again. Finland's an unusual country. There's several languages in Europe that don't appear to have Indo-European roots, and nobody knows how the heck they survived and where they came from. Finland's one of them, Hungary's one of them, and the Basque country in Spain is one of them. So the Finns aren't going to be going Russian anytime soon. As a result of this, they're going to put in for NATO membership, and Russia just threatened them with hypersonic nuclear missiles. Now, let me tell you something. When somebody makes a doomsday threat so frequently, it loses its teeth. We know they have nuclear missiles. They know we have nuclear missiles. And they know the minute they launch one, that's the end of Moscow, St. Petersburg, all their cities. In the 10th century, Russia was a little over a thousand years ago, Russia was a forest inhabited by wolves. And it will once again be a forest inhabited by wolves if they go through with any of this. They're not going to go through with any of it. They're getting strangled economically. So why do we not, Joe Biden, you're being stabbed by Republicans, traitors to the country, I get it, but why are we not sending airplanes? We can send MiGs, 70 of them, in the possession of Slovakia, Slovenia, Poland, the old Warsaw Pact countries. Let Zelensky put in his own no-fly zone, get food and water to Mariupol. Why are we not giving them shore-to-ship missiles that can take out Russian ships, not just 20 miles or 40 miles away, but 200 miles away? Why aren't we giving them multi-missile launchers? So that it's not like in the old days, you stick a cannonball in the cannon and then you hold your ears and the thing goes off. These are multi-missile launchers. You put six or eight of them, touch a button and off they go. Relentless bombing of everything Russian in Ukraine. Why aren't we doing that? Why aren't we giving them more tanks? Why aren't we giving them more armored vehicles? Why aren't we opening up a humanitarian corridor in Mariupol, getting them ammunition, food, and water, and getting evacuees out? Nothing that we do to the Nazi Ruskies in Ukraine is going to lead to a nuclear war. There was a clown that just spoke for the Russian government, and you got to listen to the status of who says it. If Putin says it, it has more meaning. He doesn't say very much. He has Medvedev, the president, say it, or he'll have Sergey Lavrov. This one is a lower level clown in one of their departments who said that Russia is not going to use nuclear weapons unless it's an existential threat, like there are troops, NATO troops in Moscow. Well, NATO troops aren't going into Moscow. I've been to Moscow. Nice enough city. If I want a good meal, I'll go to New York or Paris or Rome. I'm not going to Moscow. I ate in a restaurant called the Aphrodite, and the only reason I ate there was because Pushkin had his last meal there before he was killed in a duel in the 19th century. And I kind of like that kind of stuff. It was passable, but nobody's going to go there as a tourist. We don't need to go to Moscow. They know we're not going to Moscow. These people are woofing. We can stop them in Ukraine. If we do not stop them in Ukraine, and they continue to butcher and slaughter that population, demoralizing Eastern Europe, we've given Putin a win, and for the next 10 years, he'll be up to this, always threatening, always threatening. Stop them now. Send the planes. Send the shorter ship missiles. Call your congressman. And if they do a song and dance, get a different congressman. Get a different congressman. I'm tired of this kind of weakness. Going to a break. The lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. It's all right. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. You cry all the time. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Crying all the time. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open. 844-967-2789. Well, let me tell you what the Easter messages from the Trump family were, and you're not going to believe it. Maybe you've read it, probably haven't read it all. Unbelievable. Donald Trump Jr. posted a picture of three Easter bunnies holding automatic rifles and dressed in camo. In front of them are a row of Easter eggs. And the bunnies are go, come on and take it. You know, and the hashtag is Easter. Now, let me tell you something. I like Easter egg hunts. I like seeing little kids running around the lawn looking for eggs. I don't like to see three bunnies with automatic rifles and camo laying out the eggs and saying to the kids, come and take it. I don't like that, quite frankly. I think that's cold and heartless and strange and weird. The guy is bad news, a strange ranger, an extremely sick individual, Donald Trump Jr. But how about Donald Trump Sr.? You can say, well, the spawn of Trump is not his fault. Well, that's not true. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree here. Here are two messages that Trump put out. He's been suspended by Twitter, but his PAC is not suspended by Twitter because it's a PAC. So he issues his statements through his PAC. Here's one of them. I'm not kidding. On Easter Sunday, quote from Donald Trump Sr., the former president, Donald Trump, quote, happy Easter to all, including the radical left maniacs who are trying everything to destroy our country. May they not succeed, but let them be happy, healthy, wealthy, and well, nevertheless. And that's just a strange, sick thing to say. This is Easter, okay? This is the holiest, holiest day, theologically, in our Christian tradition. And this former president is saying, happy Easter to all, including the radical left maniacs, and may they not succeed. I mean, sticking politics into it. Sticking politics into it. But that wasn't enough. His PAC, because he's suspended from Twitter, so he does it through his PAC, also released this message on Easter, attacking Letitia James, who's the Attorney General of New York, right now is pursuing a civil lawsuit against Trump and his organizations for fraud, for undervaluing his properties in Manhattan, for tax purposes and overvaluing the same properties to get a loan, which is a felony. And Alvin Bragg, the newly elected district attorney in Manhattan, took a dive and dismissed criminal charges against him, or actually told his people not even to bring him. Somebody got to him. Got to be a grand jury investigation of Alvin Bragg's bank accounts. But Letitia James is holding tough on the civil lawsuit, which could yield judgments for fraud. And here's what he says on Easter Sunday. He attacks Letitia James. And he says, may she remain healthy despite the fact that she will continue to drive business out of New York. And then he goes on to say she is a racist. That is a code word for encouraging violence against her. May she remain healthy. Because back when the DA of Atlanta was investigating him, and still is, for extortion, felony, for calling up Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, and threatening him with criminal prosecution if he didn't come up with another 11,500 some odd votes. Trump was in Arizona, gave a speech saying that prosecutors were after him, were racist, anti-American, and people should do something about it. That's code for violence. He uses code for violence. Against Hillary Clinton, he said the Second Amendment people should take care of her. Secret Service talked to him. He said, I meant they should vote. They were confused, didn't know what to do. He was a Republican nominee. They let him go. Don't do it again, they said. Then he goes, her bodyguard should be disarmed. What if she'd said that about him? Second Amendment. There are more Second Amendment people in union halls than hedge fund conference rooms. What if she said that about him? And his bodyguard should be disarmed. She doesn't say stuff like that, neither do we. These clowns, drifting towards being a fascist party, are encouraging violence. So you have the son, Donald Trump Jr., with a hashtag Easter, posting three Easter bunnies holding automatic rifles, dressed in camo, with Easter eggs lined up, standing behind them with guns saying, come and take it. Then you have Trump calling Letitia James a racist on Easter, saying may she remain healthy, which is a code word for violence, that she's driving business out of New York. And then another text from his PAC, who's even thrown off of Twitter himself, saying happy Easter to all, including the radical left maniacs. This is a sick family. A very sick family, sick guy, very sick guy. He cannot be permitted to be president again. One of the beneficial side effects of prosecuting him is it would make it virtually impossible for him to run again. But Alvin Bragg, DA of Manhattan, took a dive. And politically, nobody is investigating his bank accounts and who got to him, if anybody got to him. He got in identity politics, Cyrus Vance, the incumbent, one of the best prosecutors in the country, but he didn't have identity politics chops, knew he couldn't run, so eight others ran, all trying to slice and dice ethnicities. This clown gets in and takes a dive. Letitia James is going after him, but it's only civil. The DA and Atlanta is going after him. She's getting death threats as a result of his encouragement in that speech. And nobody is. I mean, if you said, why don't you shoot the DA of somewhere or shoot a presidential candidate that's a felony, you'll go to jail for at least 5 years. So people don't say that anymore if they're smart. They use code words, and that's what Trump is doing. We've kept violence out of our politics since 1860. When Abraham Lincoln got elected, the South initially threatened to secede. Lincoln went to Washington by train to be sworn in, and there was a plot against him in Baltimore to kill him. He got word of it. The Secret Service did. They didn't have a Secret Service back then. They hired Pinkertons, but whoever was the equivalent of the Secret Service got wind of it. Lincoln went in disguise. Now, I don't know how you disguise a 6'4" guy during a time when the average height for a man was probably 5'8". Be like a 6'8" guy now. Looks like Lincoln, but somehow they disguised him and he snuck in. But we haven't had that since then. Not organized. We've had presidential assassinations, but not organized violence by one of the political parties. That we have not had. That we have not had. But we're having it now. We're having it with Trump. And one of the things about fascism people don't understand is fascism is not an ideology. It's not anything, an economic thing or a political thing. It is simply a strong man seizing power and trying to hang on as long as possible and steal as much money as possible and kill his political opponents. That's all it is. It's organized crime. And that is how the Republican Party is drifting. Go to the lines. Joe of Madison, my friend. Thanks for calling, Joe. What's in your mind today?
Well, I'm interested to have your speculation on this, and I realize it would just be speculation because it's hard to know all the details. But when I think about the all of these investigations that are taking place, but particularly on the federal level, as Garland's DOJ is having to bring DOJ lawyers from other projects, other lines of inquiry to process all of the people that were involved in this insurrection on January 6th, I mean, it's hundreds of people that they're having to go through and process and set up to go to trial. I mean, all of that stuff is incredibly expensive, and all of the processes of investigating what happened on January 6th. I'm just thinking, when we think about pocketbook issues, I don't know that we ever think about all of the money that has to be spent on prosecuting these crimes of Trump. I just and his associates. It has to be. I know you would be speculating here, but when you think of hundreds of people that have been the lower echelon that's being investigated, and then you start to get into people like Mark Meadows, and then onto Trump and family. Do you have any thought at all about what we have lost because of his lawlessness? Did you want to? I'd love to hear your speculation on that, Matt. Thank you.
Yeah, Joe, that's an excellent comment. Really is, and let me address it. First of all, you're right. And in fact, there are more than 700 prosecutions right now. Every one of them requires a prosecutor and a team and, you know, going over visual evidence, photographic evidence, and so forth. A judge can, as a condition of the sentence, they can say, all right, you're going to get a year in jail or 2 years in jail or 6 months in jail. And they can assess not just a fine, but they can assess fees to a point. They're not going to assess the prosecutor's the equivalent, the imputed value of the prosecutor's time. But the time of investigators and so forth, I think is absolutely appropriate, and they should. The problem is a lot of these people aren't wealthy, and realistically, you're not going to collect it. And then if you go out and try to collect it, that's expensive. And then they declare bankruptcy. And there is an exception in the bankruptcy code for fraud and criminality. You cannot discharge a debt that was incurred because of fraud or criminality, then you have to show that. And then what you do is you garnish their paycheck. Well, you know, depending on what their paycheck is, that may be pennies on the dollar. The way to really do it would be when wealthy people are involved, and absolutely go after them for that. But one of the things about Merrick Garland, and I understand he has a tough job, but Merrick Garland, just going after the 700 people who are in there, is not enough. He has to go after Trump. He has to go after these people for insurrection, not just blowing off a subpoena. And I'll be honest with you, Joe, I do not get the feeling of that I have confidence in Merrick Garland. I don't think he is strong enough. I think he is intimidated, and it's about time we had a different attorney general, a tough, aggressive attorney general. That's my view. We're coming to a break. I'd like to talk some more about this. Very, very good comment. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. I want to pitch something to Sam, but before I do, I want to give a final response to Joe, called in a very good question. And the question is the expense, if nothing else, of all these prosecutions of people and these investigations of people close to Trump. It's a staggering amount of money, and what can we do? And I've talked a little bit before about one of the things we can do is impose some of the costs of it in sentencing, although for a person of modest means, that's really doesn't have much effect. And for the people who have wealth, yes, but that doesn't begin to recoup the 700 prosecutions of people who are in the Capitol. But one of the things that does occur to me, and I think the Democrats could do a lot better job in messaging this, is you could put a price tag on all these investigations, and it would be in the billions of dollars with a B, and this is taxpayer money. This president is so frankly damaged. He is so, it's really an illness, a cancer, that what he has spawned fraud, violence, and overturning the rule of law. And if nothing else, it's cost these many billion dollars and is continuing to cost, you know, $20 million a month or whatever it is. And that's taxpayer money. That's taxpayer money. For instance, part of the attack on Gableman and Voss and what they're doing is Gableman's getting $11,000 a month of taxpayer money to do nothing, literally. Go around and lie about the election, but do nothing. And his staff, his anonymous staff, get $20,000 a month, all Republicans. The Republicans are paying themselves $31,000 a month out of your money to do nothing. Well, what's happening at the federal level is billions have been spent and will likely be spent on all these investigations. And the damage, it's not just to our economy, but it's not fair to use tax dollars when you have essentially a criminal enterprise. This is just an overgrown criminal enterprise, and that has got to get out in a lot more effective way than we have. So thanks very much. Sam, I want to bounce something off you. Overnight, there were some headlines, and yesterday. Is there a headline or two that struck your eye, especially local or state, that we should respond to?
Yeah, definitely, Matt. Thanks for asking. I was reading an article here from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that I thought I would love to get your thoughts on about the whole Milwaukee public school dismantling and the whole expansion of the private schools. As of Friday, Democratic Governor Tony Evers vetoed legislation that would have dramatically overhauled education in Wisconsin, not just Milwaukee, making children eligible to receive taxpayer-funded private school vouchers regardless of their household income. So it would allow a lot more of people to get into the public school or the private schools rather than the public schools. And parents would have been able to sue school districts for violations of new parental bill of rights under another bill Evers vetoed as well. And then I also saw that the Shorewood High School here in Milwaukee had a walkout this last Thursday protesting college tuition prices, as well as calling for Biden to kind of get going on his promise to eliminate student debt. So I was hoping to get your thoughts on those headlines, Matt.
Yeah, that's a mouthful. And so I'm going to give them to you because those are very important things. First of all, Evers has done a good job vetoing. He vetoed more than 40 voting restriction bills that the Republicans put in to make it very difficult to vote. And along with their gerrymandered districts would ensure, frankly, just their own party's power for a long time. And what Evers did on that was not try to put in anybody's advantage, but just stick up for your right to vote. So what you're describing now is a second wave of these bills on education. And I'm going to give very briefly my thoughts on it because they're vital. Ultimately, the future of this country are people, young people, and the future of the country depends on their education. First of all, on vouchers and charter schools. Vouchers and charter schools have done a good job in Milwaukee and in Racine and in some areas. There are a number of youngsters who are in schools that are not performing, and there's wide support in Milwaukee and Racine and elsewhere for charter schools and voucher schools, simply because these are people that come from populations that have been segregated, been very, very badly treated, and they are given various options to have a different kind of educational experience. So there it's worked. And you know, these charter schools, for instance, one is sponsored by UWM. One might be sponsored by a bunch of CEOs who put their own money into it as well, and they have the good of the kids at heart. Now, what Evers vetoed was extending that statewide and making us an educational system that basically is a voucher system. You get a certain amount of money each year from the state, and no matter whether you are Bill Gates's kid or whether you are a poor man's kid or an orphan's kid or an orphan, and you can spend it anywhere you want. That's not a good idea for a couple of reasons. It's very appropriate to send kids to private schools if you want to, but if you have the means to pay for it, you should pay for it. The public shouldn't pay for it, number one. Number two, public schools perform a wonderful service and are one of the reasons for the rise of our middle class, because they teach kids of all backgrounds, ethnicities, income levels, faiths, and put them all together, and everybody sees that the others are human beings. In other countries, there is very rigid segregation by tribe, by ethnicity, by religion, and it's almost mandatory by the state. And what that does is it balkanizes a society. So I'm a strong supporter of public schools, and I think that the present system, where you have charter schools and voucher schools for some very good reasons in areas where there have been tremendous segregation, has worked very well. But to extend it statewide, regardless of income, was a bad idea. Evers vetoed it. And the other thing is this business of suing schools and suing teachers, like in Florida, if they say something that you think involves critical race theory, they say, we want you to read Martin Luther King's speeches, and you sue them. Or in Texas, if you hear a woman's going to have an abortion and you just stick your nose in and sue her for 10 grand. People don't understand lawyers. Lawyers are out there looking for clients. They really are. If you get in a car accident that's publicly reported on the police log, you'll get 17 letters within the week offering to represent you. People pursue opportunities. There'll be a whole bar that will rise up to sue school teachers, to sue schools. And then they'll, quote, settle, end quote, for, quote, attorney's fees, end quote, i.e. their fees. So it was a terrible idea. It was a terrible idea when it applied in even worse in Florida, where if you even mention something like that they say is critical race theory, even if it isn't, and it's not taught in Wisconsin, you have to hire lawyers. Get lawyers out of education. I'm saying that as a lawyer. Get lawyers out of education. They have no part in education or medicine, no part whatsoever. With regard to some of the other things, breaking up MPS, I mean, my God, the Republican Party doesn't like Milwaukee. It's not just that they don't give Milwaukee its fair allocation of state resources. Milwaukee sends $400 million in tax revenue a year to Madison and gets a little over half back. And everybody shouts, well, Milwaukee is a drain. Milwaukee's not a drain. Milwaukee's the financial engine and the cultural engine of the state. So to have these clowns divided up and impose their will, let's leave that to professional educators, not to Voss. And then the final thing is, on the Shorewood students, on the forgiveness of student loans, you don't want something like that, regardless of income. You really don't. These are kids. I think it's great. I mean, when I was a kid, everybody goes running out demonstrating about a lot of things. But Biden is working on one that is, I hope, means test related, and is oriented towards people who really need it. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.